Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Today on Connecting Faith, we're going to talk about faith at work and more about the kind of attitudes that we carry into work each day. But before we get to today's good conversation, just want to think a little bit about the work of the cross as we are here in Holy Week and an important time to reflect. Ted came across this quote from John Stott. Of course, there's so many quotable things, but this just kind of caught my attention just as I read it yesterday. It says, before we can begin to see the cross as something done for us, we have to see it as something done by us. Now, we share culpability, don't we? All have sinned and come short of God's glory. Christ died for us. I don't know if you had a chance to hear Susie Larson yesterday talking to Liz Curtis Higgs. I've been talking about the women in the Easter story, but it was a powerful presentation. Check that out at the Live the Promise show page at myfaithradio.com. By the way, when you're at myfaithradio.com, you want to sign up for our devotional giveaway.
Yeah, the countdown is on here now. At Easter, this is not going to be in effect anymore. It's the Kay Warren's Choose Joy devotional. You can enter. We're giving one away every day up until Easter. A lot of people have already gotten theirs. And just right there on our main page, you'll see the link for it. These are great devotionals. No matter what you're going through, true joy is within reach. And Kay Warren talks about that, a 30-day devotional.
So we're giving one of those away every day through Easter. So sign up today at myfaithradio.com. You can sign up to win. All right. Are you joyful at work? Ted, this is kind of a little quick question for you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Okay. Yeah. All right. So Ted's on the board and Curtis is at the phones. We're going to talk about the vibrant workplace, overcoming the obstacles to building a culture of appreciation. This will all be theoretical for us.
Yeah, right.
That's right. So, and you just keep reading the cue sheets like I wrote them up for you. All right. My guest today, Dr. Paul White. Paul is a psychologist, author, and speaker who makes work relationships work. He's consulted with a wide variety of organizations, and he and Gary Chapman co-authored The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace. You know, he has, for the past 20 years, worked on helping companies and organizations and businesses, schools, et cetera, nonprofits, help them create positive workplace relationships, improve staff morale, eliminate the cynicism, sarcasm, and lack of trust that's often associated with traditional employee recognition programs, and reduce staff burnout and turnover. And looking forward to jumping back into a conversation with Paul White. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Good to have you on with us.
Thank you, Neil. I'm glad to be back.
This is a great topic and one that's probably something that we need to jump into a little more frequently, because a lot of people aren't maybe satisfied in their job, or it's not going all that well. Maybe we should start with a definition though first. What are we talking about when we say a vibrant workplace? What are those characteristics?
Well, you know, a vibrant workplace is a workplace that is positive, it's energetic, it has a sense of growth going on versus, you know, dying. And generally it has healthy relationships and it's productive. I mean, work gets done. It's not a perfect workplace by any means. And sometimes that's a problem that people think, you know, it should be fun and happy and not stressful all the time. But that's really not what a vibrant workplace is. In spite of the challenges that each workplace has, it continues to move forward in a healthy way.
Well, we're talking about the subtitle is overcoming the obstacles to building a culture of appreciation. Maybe it's important we define what is appreciation and maybe what is it not.
Right. You know, and part of the context is, you know, like you said, that Dr. Chapman and I have written The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, and that sort of contrasts employee recognition programs that are out there. About 85 to 90% of all businesses and organizations have employee recognition activities they do. But unfortunately, the way they're done often leads to really negative reactions of people not trusting and feeling like it's not genuine. And we talk about authentic appreciation is that it really you're communicating a sense of value for the other person. And Often it's work-related, but sometimes it's not. It can be for other things. So it's that sense of some kind of communication, whether it's verbal or some other kind of action, whether it's spending time with them or helping them out, showing that you really do value them as a colleague.
So what is it about those employee appreciation programs, things that are in place now, that why are they we suspicious of them? Why don't they work?
Yeah, what we've found, and it started out good, but they've sort of migrated over time to really being quite generic, that everybody, gets sort of the same certificate and maybe a $20 gift card to someplace. And it's very rote and mechanistic. It's not about them as a person. I had one gal say, she got an award for being employee of the quarter or whatever, and the president of the company started to talk about how much he appreciated her, and she shared with me, he said, he doesn't appreciate me. He doesn't know me. He couldn't pick me out of a group. Now, he values the work that I did, and that's fine, but there's a difference between focusing on performance, which is fine, and then valuing the person. And so a lot of these employee recognition programs are very generic. They're group-based, and a lot of people don't like to go up in front of groups to be recognized. And so they try to be personal, but they do it in an impersonal way, and that doesn't work.
Is it the same for, like, the best place to work survey, some of those kinds of things? Are they measuring maybe not the wrong things?
Not necessarily. I mean, because and I'm familiar with them and work in tandem with them. They take into consideration other kinds of things as far as being able to give your input and feel like you're listened to and sort of good communication. So there's other components, but. And actually, they sometimes refer organizations to me because one of the pieces that organizations have a hard time with is being able to move that measure, if you will, of people feeling valued and appreciated because they're going about it in a way that doesn't work. The key issue related to that is that different people feel appreciated in different ways. And most of the time in the workplace, we use words or sometimes awards, which can be, some kind of tangible gift or something. And our research, we've had over 100,000 people take our Motivating by Appreciation inventory that comes with the Five Languages of Appreciation book. And that's only about 50% of the population. The other 50%, really value quality time and acts of service. And then physical touch is an interesting thing in that it's mainly spontaneous celebration. It's a high five or a fist bump when you finish a project or solve a problem, that kind of thing. But if we don't communicate appreciation personally about what they've done and in a way that's meaningful to them, in a lot of ways we're wasting our time and energy.
Well, actually, it was one of my questions is, as I've been reading the Vibrant Workplace, Overcoming the Obstacles to Building a Culture of Appreciation, is because it's built on, your previous work with Gary Chapman, the five love languages, is if an expression of appreciation isn't in their love language, is it still received as, sincere? Even if we may be sincere, we're just not communicating in maybe the right way or the best way.
Right. Yeah. And that's going to differ from person to person, I think. But I think they maybe don't question the person's, authenticity about it. But it doesn't sort of meet the need. I mean, it's like if you feel valued when people whom you want to spend time with you, but all they ever do is sort of compliment you, but you never get any time with them, at some point it just sort of doesn't really rock the boat for you. And so it's more a waste of time. Now, what happens is when there is inauthenticity, that people say things, one thing and do another, that creates problems, obviously, in the sense of not feeling like the other person is being genuine.
Is this something that we just assume that this is just for leadership, for managers, that they sort of spread this down through the organization, or is this for anybody working at whatever level?
You know, and that's one of the interesting things that Dr. Chapman and I learned. When we first started with the five languages of appreciation, we were focusing on managers and supervisors. But as I've gone out and worked with organizations and leaders over the past 7-8 years, one of the first messages that we got was, hey, we want to know how to encourage our colleagues, and that also managers felt like this is too much weight for me to be able to sort of support, encourage everybody on my team. And we found that very successfully and importantly for team members to know how to communicate appreciation and encouragement to one another. And when there's the combination of an individual doing it along with their supervisor, it's very powerful. And I would say one of the key aspects of the vibrant workplace is that often the leadership doesn't get it. You know, I mean, that you know, sometimes in the business world, it's not only in the business world, I mean, it could be in Christian ministries as well, that they're very goal-oriented. And so it's about getting stuff done, and they don't really, I'm going to say, care, or they don't seem to care about the team. And so part of the challenge is, well, can I do anything by myself just as an individual, whether I'm just a department lead or I'm just a worker? And the answer is yes, because we found that there's some initial steps that each person can take that can start to make a difference to help make their workplace more positive.
All right. In the moments ahead, we'll learn about some of those steps that we can all take. Maybe you're in a supervisory position and you want to express, you know, care and appreciation, but don't necessarily know how to do that, or maybe haven't been doing it well, falling on deaf ears perhaps, or you just want to, you know, be a better coworker and encourage colleagues. You know, we all should be pursuing that. So we're going to learn more about it. How could we have a vibrant workplace? Overcoming the obstacles to building a culture of appreciation. Dr. Paul White's my guest today. By the way, we've got 3 or 4 copies of this wonderful new little book to give away, and would love to have you sign up for that. And I hope that if you've got a question, maybe an experience in your workplace you'd like to share, just give us some good feedback, good conversation in the moments ahead. You can call us at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. You want to sign up for a copy of Dr. Paul White's new book, The Vibrant Workplace. And if you have a question, too, join in with us. Or if you want to submit it via email, you can go to myfaithradio.com, then click on the Connecting Faith show page. And we can take your question or comment that way. Dr. Paul White, psychologist, author, and speaker, and he's written, he and Gary Chapman co-wrote The 5 Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace. This is a good follow-up to that, and we'll talk more in just a moment. Talking about anybody in specific, but you know, we are going to address, so what do you do if you're working with hopeless fools? No, that's not all we're going to talk about today. We're talking about the vibrant workplace, the overcoming the obstacles to building a culture of appreciation. And I'm glad to have with us Dr. Paul White, who's a psychologist, author, and speaker, and he's traveled around the globe, really, and working with the major corporations, companies, schools, businesses. Grew up in the context of family-owned business, and so he understands of what he speaks, and he's written several books and co-written with Dr. Gary Chapman, The 5 Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, and our conversation today draws from that as well. The new book, The Vibrant Workplace, is out on a Northfield on the Moody imprint, and we're grateful to have Dr. White with us today. Is this an issue, Paul, with more millennials in the workplace that, you know, they're used to getting acknowledged for participation, or is that just you know, an idea that we like to float out there?
Well, it is an issue for millennials, but the issue existed prior to millennials entering the workforce, and hasn't necessarily gotten worse in that sense. Millennials do feel valued in different ways. The actions that we use are different. The 5 languages actually are the same for them, and even cross-culturally. I mean, we have the book in 15 different languages, but the actions are different. So, for example, a millennial, a handwritten note to them, especially a 20-something guy, means not a whole lot more than just an email. But for them, the speed in which you get back to them is important because of how fast their culture and their life is lived. So that's more important. But and that's part of the issue, is helping people understand how another person feels valued and that it's different to them. When I talk to leaders or developing leaders, say, if you're going to lead people, you have to learn how to lead people who are different than you. And one of those differences is that people are motivated or feel valued in different ways. And so just doing what's important to you isn't necessarily going to get it done with the people with whom you work.
Well, I guess we all assume that, you know, the motivation at work, well, it's money, right? We just give you more money, give a little bonus, you know, gift card, those things. That's going to be showing appreciation the best way.
Right. Actually, I mean, a lot of research shows that's not true. For some people it is, but for most people, money only lasts for a little while and doesn't go very deep. And so there are other non-monetary kinds of things, like hearing a compliment occasionally, or having some time with people that you value, or getting some help on a project, maybe being instructed. And sometimes it's a gift, but it's not money. It's more that they have gotten to know you and understand you. So it could be that you got a magazine about, if you were a North Carolina basketball fan, you got sort of one of those, you know, championship magazines, and they got that for you and say, hey, I know you you like Roy Williams in North Carolina and thought you'd like this. It's more about understanding that you're getting to know them as a person rather than the monetary value. I will say, you know, earlier you teased about, you know, what about if you work with a fool or whatever. One of our chapters is actually on how do you show appreciation to difficult to appreciate people, because there are people that are, you know, grumpy and or poor performers, and, you know, do we just leave them out? And the answer is no. In fact, one of the key messages, I was meeting with one of my staff, they said, you need to emphasize and understand that lots of times people focus on the top performers and the low performers. I mean, that we, you know, we reward the top ones and then we sort of get after the low ones. But it's the big middle group that aren't necessarily your stars, but they're solid people. They show up, they do their work. And they don't get the recognition for achievements, but they're still in there day in and day out. And if we don't communicate and show them appreciation, they're the ones that we can lose and they'll leave. And we know that about almost 80% of the people who voluntarily leave their work say that a lack of appreciation is one of the main reasons they leave. So if you don't want to lose your good, solid people, you've got to learn how to communicate appreciation the way that it's meaningful to them.
That's a pretty sobering statistic that, you know, about 4 out of 5, you know, are quitting their job if they're not appreciated, I mean, voluntarily. That should be kind of arresting our attention a little bit.
I agree. And and I sort of lead when I speak to groups. I'd lead with that because I say, you know, if you have a key person that you don't want to lose, you better make sure that they feel valued and appreciated. Otherwise, they're sort of on the trading block and they may be looking around.
Is there, I mean, something, you know, David talked about, you know, he'd encouraged himself, you know, should we just, you know, kind of do that and not expect it from others? I mean, is that, are we setting up others to, you know, not meet our expectations in this way?
Well, Neil, I need to find out what your language is and do something for you, because that's another topic addressed in the book that actually we get pushback from supervisors. And the question is, what do I do if I don't feel valued and appreciated? You know, am I just supposed to gut it out? And we actually have a whole series of actions to take a look at it. And one of the last ones, it's not the first one, but sometimes leaders have to lead out of maturity and you do things because it's the right thing to do, you know, feel it. But the other part is that lots of times leaders don't open up and let those around know that they need to be encouraged or supported, or how they, you know, what language is important to them. And so part of it is modeling and opening up and letting others know that, hey, I don't mind hearing a good word or getting some help when I'm behind, and letting people do that for you.
Well, I was thinking, we sort of talked about this idea of, you know, supervisors, managers, this is top down, but, you know, managing up too, that there is, we need to communicate, I guess, just like in any relationship, right? We need to explain what we appreciate and what is meaningful to us.
Absolutely. And in fact, in another chapter on the in the book, we talk about leaders, and I would say nonprofit leaders and ministry leaders are just out there dying lots of times on this element, because lots of times they're overseen, like in nonprofits, by a board of directors who are volunteers, and you know they're sort of engaged but not fully. Well, the directors are doing the best job they can, but they just don't hear much and don't get much support. And so it is really important in within ministry, whether it's your pastor or the ministry leader or some other person who's leading where you're plugged in, for them to get words of encouragement and maybe some help, or have some time just hanging out with people that they enjoy so that they can sort of get recharged themselves.
You know, you mentioned that, you know, 4 out of 5 employees will quit their jobs if they're underappreciated and voluntarily do that. But I assume some stay, which maybe leads to a toxic workplace. You've written a lot about the toxic workplace. So what? How does lack of appreciation lead to a toxic workplace?
Yeah. Well, first, let me just say that it's been interesting how God has led over time, you know, starting out with appreciation, and that led us to toxic workplaces and now vibrant. If people are interested in sort of seeing that, if they go to our sort of core website, it's called appreciationatwork.com. It's the word at, but appreciationatwork.com. There's actually a section on the homepage that sort of gives you a light into each of these. But a toxic workplace and a lack of appreciation clearly go together. But toxic workplaces are characterized by different things, including sort of a sick system, just that there's poor communication, a lack of communication, often deceit or distorted information. Often there are what we would call a toxic leader at some place in the organization. It's not necessarily at the top, but there's people that they're not incompetent. They're just out there for themselves. They're really sort of narcissistic, and all they care about is themselves. And so that's what they look out for. And if there's any praise in the air, they grab it, and whether they did the action or not. And if there's any blame to go, you know, they can shove it your direction. And that, along with sort of a dysfunctional way of relating between people, as far as people always making excuses and blaming and never being held accountable or overly emotionally reactive. And so appreciation is part of that. And in fact, you know, we talked about a little bit earlier, you know, what can an individual do? I'm a psychologist, and sometimes I'm embarrassed to be a psychologist, because the things that we find supposedly by research are pretty darn simple. And the things that our mom and our grandma taught us, and if we would have listened to them, we wouldn't have to, you know, buy books or go hear somebody speak. And part of it is, I encourage people, that's the two simplest steps of ways that you can make a difference is, first,
well, let's leave a cliffhanger there. Oh. We got two things coming up that we're going to find out, and you have to stay tuned to find out more. Dr. Paul White, as we're talking about the vibrant workplace, his new book, got copies available to give away at 877-93-FAITH. Love to have you share a bit about your work life experience as well. And join with us. I'd like to just say that Ted and Chris are doing great jobs today here. You're listening to Connecting Faith. More with Paul White just ahead. For following the Lord, hopefully our lives are reflecting His grace and kindness. That goes a long way. Appreciation, it is, it's missing in a lot of workplaces, and it's making a difference in the productivity and just attitude and in sticking around, right? Why do 4 in every 5 employees quit their jobs? According to research, it's because they don't feel appreciated. We're talking the vibrant workplace, overcoming the obstacles to building a culture of appreciation with Dr. Paul White. And we talked to Paul in the past. He's written several books, talked about the toxic workplace not too long ago. He also co-authored with Dr. Gary Chapman, The 5 Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, which has sold, been translated into 15 languages, and all across the globe people are reading that. Paul is a psychologist, author, and speaker, and consultant to working with businesses, schools, government agencies, nonprofits to help us create positive workplace relationships and improve staff morale. And we've been talking about it today. One of our listeners called in and just mentioned, Paul, that he got a keychain after 5 years. Pretty happy about
that's pretty motivating for hanging in there for the next five.
Wow. Yeah, you shouldn't have. Really, you shouldn't have, actually. So, all right, when we last left our conversation with Paul, you were talking about grandma was right. You don't have to be a psychologist to know there are a couple of basic things that we should do, and we were going to get to those two things.
Yeah. So any of us, and all of us, have, assuming we work in relationship to someone around us, and whether it's customers or colleagues or vendors, have the ability to influence those around us. And the first thing, especially in a more toxic kind of place, is to not engage in the negative. I mean, don't join into the cynicism, the sarcasm, the complaining and grumbling, the cutting remarks, the gossip. Just remove yourself. Sometimes it's helpful to just sort of walk away silently. You don't have to put people down, but just don't engage in that so that you're not fueling that negative energy. So that's the first. That's helpful, but that doesn't necessarily turn things around because people can continue to do that. So the second is what? It's to engage in positive comments and interactions. And so that can be saying thanks to a colleague for doing something for you or with you or the quality of job they did. But sometimes if there's a lot of negativity going on, you're sort of looking for is there something positive I can say? Sometimes it's just like, wow, what a beautiful day. I'm just loving the blue sky out there. Or, isn't it cool how we have safe water to drink and we have, access to medicine and so forth. Let's say if you just got, over a cold or being sick. So sometimes we've got to really help sort of turn people's vision away from all this negativity and say, yeah, there are things to be thankful about. And obviously these things are mentioned in Scripture all over the place. And I just want to mention that both of our books, Dr. Chapman and I didn't write it from an overtly Christian perspective on purpose, even though we obviously come at it from a biblical worldview of people have value just because we are God's creations. But we wanted the materials to be able to be used in settings where, Bible verses wouldn't be accepted. And so fortunately, we've been used in public schools, in hospitals, in the military, in various government settings, and, numerous private sector settings. So it's not that we don't believe in the truth of the word. In fact, that's the basis of everything. But we just felt like it would be more receptive by people who and organizations that don't share that with us.
I'm wondering if we just take a few minutes to talk about the five love languages of appreciation. I mean, we, familiar with Dr. Chapman's work, and you've, co-written this with him, but maybe just to give some tangibles, some examples. Here's if, your love language is this, or somebody, find out what it is, and here's how you can show appreciation. Why don't we go through those?
Sure. So the most common language of appreciation in the workplace is words of affirmation, and it's about 45% of the workforce out of the 100,000 people that we've had take the inventory. And probably the simplest way to think about that is that people like to hear that they've done a good job. But lots of times we actually miss the boat because we're too vague. And one survey we gave, people said a phrase I don't like to hear is good job because it's so generic. And one worker told me, they wouldn't know if I did a good job or not because they don't know what I do, And so the way to give an effective compliment is to first of all use the person's name. We like to hear our name. If you're writing it, make sure you spell their name correctly because there's a lot of different ways to spell names today. So it could be Michelle, and then you tell specifically something that you value or appreciate that they've done. Michelle, thank you for getting your report to me on time and so that I can, use it. And the third part of that is why it's important that she did that. And it's either important to you or important to the organization or your customers. Michelle, thank you for getting your report to me done on time. That way I can turn my report around in time without being super pressured and get that to my supervisor as well. So use your name, use the person's name, give a specific, and then why that action's important. Time, quality time in the workplace can take a couple different forms. One, some people really do value time with their manager or supervisor, and either to be able to share observations and give input or to be able to get some instruction and help. But I've had some people say, I don't like individual time with my supervisor. They're pretty intense, and I'm sort of shy. But the kind of time I like is hanging out with my colleagues. And so that could be going out to lunch or just hanging out at break time or after work. And so one of the things we did in our inventory is not only identify the languages that people like, but the specific actions and from whom they want it so that we help people hit the mark. One of the things we know that one of the obstacles is busyness, you know, that people are busy. They have plenty to do. So we try to help make things very simple, practical, so that you can just do a little something different and it makes a difference versus wasting time and energy. Acts of service is largely doing small things that help make your colleague's day or week go better. And the best way to think about it is sort of the context when you're sort of at a time deadline, you got some project or something coming up that you, an event that you're working on, that it's got to get stuff done and you're really working hard to make it happen. What's something somebody could do that would help make that go easier? I mean, it could be as simple as you know, bringing in lunch for you so that you can, you know, keep working through lunch. It could be sort of managing your incoming calls for an hour or so that you can, you know, focus on getting this project done. And actually the most common act of service request that we found in the general workplace is help get my computer to work right. I was speaking to Microsoft managers, and they started to boo me about that. But I said, no, it's true. I mean, you know, whether the certain program doesn't work or whatever. So you may not be able to fix it, but you may be able to facilitate getting, you know, the computer guy, the IT person to help you out. And then you're laughing about that, Neil. There must be some.
Well, it's just, yeah, that's not my, that is not my gift. And, you know, yeah, we end up just sort of, you end up working around or go, you know, put stuff off. You say, well, I can't quite figure out how to do that. And, yeah, it's sort of an ongoing. And,
right.
And of course, the, you know, the IT folks are great, but they've got plenty to do. And so they get to you when they get to you. So, yeah.
And that's actually part of our appreciation at work model is that this works across departments. What's a department you want to make sure you're on the good side of?
Yeah.
IT, you know, and also maybe human resources for payroll and maybe facilities if something breaks, you know. And so what's cool is this can work across the organization, and it's not top down. So a person who is a receptionist or who's an assistant in a certain department, they can communicate appreciation at a personal level to somebody else who's helped, you know, solve a problem or whatever. So it's not this top-down kind of management approach.
So we talked about words of appreciation, quality time, acts of service. There's a couple of more.
Yep. Yeah, tangible gifts. Tangible gifts, like I said, it's not bonuses. It's not raises. It's basically small things that help show that you're getting to know the other person and what they like. So you have a guess about what the most common tangible gift is in the workplace?
I'm thinking probably not the keychain, but the gift card maybe. Huh?
That's second.
Okay.
The first one is food. You know, so you find out what somebody's favorite coffee is and you maybe bring that in for them. Or if you're ordering pizza, you know, find out, make sure you know what kind of pizza they like. And it can be, chocolate is always good. But it can be small things as well. But it's less about the thing and the amount, but it's that they get to know you. So, like, we do chocolate at my office, and I have one colleague who likes dark chocolate, you know, and so we make sure she gets the dark chocolate, you know. And it's not a big deal, but it is a big deal because it's that you're paying attention to who they are, and you want to make sure that they feel like, hey, I'm paying attention to what you like. And then the last one is physical touch. And like I mentioned, it's not group hugs and it actually differs regionally. You know, I lived in the South for a while and they do side hugs and that kind of stuff. In the upper Midwest, it's mainly, you know, a high five, a fist bump, maybe a congratulatory handshake. In the Northeast, it's sort of looking across the room and saying, hey, and nod your head. I mean, that's about as close as you get. But again, it's you know, being able to celebrate together. And for some people, that's really important. I had a leader tell me he grew up playing sports, and he, you know, they did the high fives and all that, and he missed that in the workplace. So it's cool when you can find out what the other person like. And they light up. I mean, I just recently, one of my assistants had her anniversary, and her colleagues actually brought in her favorite iced coffee kind of thing, and she just was all bubbly about it because they found out that that's what she liked and did that for her.
Good summary of the five languages of appreciation in the workplace. It's one of the best-selling books that Dr. Paul White and Gary Chapman have co-written. I recommend it to you. We're talking about his new book, The Vibrant Workplace, Overcoming the Obstacles to Building a Culture of Appreciation. Just got a minute or so left. Paul, is there maybe number one thing, most important thing that we either as an employer supervisor or as a coworker could do to start implementing this this journey?
You know, I think there is, Neil, and it's this, and this is why we wrote the book, or I wrote the book, is that don't give up just because you encounter a little bit of a challenge or an obstacle. We identified the 10 most common obstacles for creating a positive workplace and how to overcome those. And so it can be done, whether or not your supervisor is interested, or whether you have sort of grumpy colleagues, or whether people are just super busy, or you don't understand other people. Don't give up. You know, seek out resources like the Vibrant Workplace to be able to find out, okay, how can I keep going and get past that so that we can keep building a positive workplace?
Find out more at the website appreciationatwork.com, spelled out, appreciationatwork.com. Dr. Paul White, psychologist, author, best-selling author and speaker, joining us today, talking about the vibrant workplace. Paul, great to visit with you again. Blessings to you and this Easter season, and thanks so much for coming on with us.
Thank you so much, Neil. I really appreciate it.
Dr. Paul White joining us today on Connecting Faith, and we're going to talk more about work in the moments ahead. Check out Colossians 3:17. Maybe commit that to memory and put it in practice every day about doing it all for the glory of the Lord. Talking about work today, by the way, we got some copies of The Vibrant Workplace to give away. You can sign up for that, 877-93-FAITH. Talking work with Sebastian Traeger a while back. He's written a great book called The Gospel at Work, How Working for King Jesus Gives Purpose and Meaning to Our Jobs. Sebastian, I know you spent some time in the book playing off of the word idol, and in both spellings and situations. We'll talk about that and set up the discussion on how we get off the weeds one way or the other.
Yeah, so what we do in the book is talk about two challenges that people seem to have in the workplace. And again, a lot of this is written by my own struggles in the workplace to do both of these. So if you're listening here, I'm no different than you. I'm not casting stones at you. I'm actually, you know, trying to help us all diagnose our hearts and to see how we do this. So on the one side, we're tempted to make an idol of work, and that's IDOL, right? And that's very easy to do when our jobs become maybe our primary source of satisfaction or purpose and meaning. You know, it shows up not just in, you know, working too many hours, but really in a heart that finds a lot of its sense of well-being in what we do. That's how you can see that you're being tempted to make your work an idol, when your heart is sort of going up and down depending on how your performance at the job is going or getting that promotion or not. That's how you can kind of sense that might be happening. On the other extreme, we are tempted to be idle at work, and that's IDLE. And that's kind of operating as if God doesn't care about our jobs. It's, you know, at its most extreme, it might mean not really working, but the way we think about it more in the book is just an idleness of heart. It's a heart that basically says, I don't know why I'm in this job. I don't understand God's purposes. And so therefore, I'm, you know, going to not necessarily work with my all. I'm not going to work with a heart that sees that God actually has me do this. And so those are the two kind of challenges we want people to think through. How are you tempted to make your work an idol, to elevate it to a higher level than Christ in your life? Or how are you tempted to be idle at work? How are you tempted to under underthink about your job, to kind of think God doesn't really care about what you're doing or how you're doing it. Those are the two things we want people to really think about.
So let's go back, as you talked about, you know, your work is your source of your satisfaction. I mean, shouldn't we seek satisfaction in work, and shouldn't we seek to be the best?
I would say it's perfectly fine to seek satisfaction in work, and it's perfectly fine to seek to be the best. I would want to sort of help people think, though, on the one level, it's a matter of perspective and it's a matter of expectation. So from a perspective, we need to understand that nothing, if we're Christians, nothing can compete with our allegiance to Christ, right? Nothing, not our jobs, not our families, nothing. And so our jobs can tend to, again, be above God in our hearts. We think about it more. We stress about it more. That's what we're concerned about. And so while, yes, I would say absolutely seek joy, try to be the best, but have the perspective that it's never going to be higher than your allegiance to Christ. And then the other thing I would say is about expectations. So that's perspective. From an expectations perspective, we should not be fooled into thinking that our work is ever going to reach some place of sort of final satisfaction in our lives, right? We are in a fallen world. There's only so much good that we can bring about in a fallen world, and there's only so much satisfaction that we can ever have in a fallen world. And so as long as that's our perspective, we should look at our jobs as, when we do have good days, be thankful to God that he gave us a good day, and not be pursuing them as though somehow the better we do, the higher we get promoted, the more attention we get, the more change we bring about in the world. None of that is finally going to bring about greater joy in our lives or make this world a permanently better place.
Although it seems like over the last, you know, generation or so, there's been a lot more emphasis on, you know, find work that makes a difference, right? And even there are a lot of ministries that kind of help us focus on that. You know, do something that's meaningful.
Yeah, and I would say again, all things being equal, if there's work that you can do that you think makes a bigger difference in the world than other work, then by all means, go ahead and do it. But a couple of caveats there. On the one hand, I think we are limited in our abilities to understand what work actually makes a bigger difference than other work, right? So I always like to use the example of did Bill Gates or Mother Teresa, which one of them has made a, quote, bigger difference in the world? It's very hard to really trace that out. So again, on the one hand, feel free to do work that is, quote, more meaning, you know, makes a bigger difference than other work. But I would just encourage you, by God's grace, there are so many different assignments that he gives us, so many different jobs, all of which are kind of part of his tapestry in bringing about human flourishing and serving other people's needs. So don't overstress how your job is exactly making a difference versus another job. Again, this is where this phrase we have, who you work for is more important than what you do, is so necessary. Trust the Lord in the assignment that he's given you and do that work unto him, and that's where you'll make the biggest difference and see the greatest joy, because you're doing work that's under the Lord.
I suppose the opposite is an issue as well, isn't it? I mean, maybe in that sort of idea of idleness, say, well, what difference does my job really make? I'm a cog in a big wheel or something, or, you know, that we don't have the right perspective about the little things that we want to do, you know, everything unto the Lord, the glory of God.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, on that one, we're tempted. I mean, I've certainly had jobs in my past where I feel either underappreciated or it's not taking advantage of my skills or I'm just not passionate about it. I think all those things are true. Honestly, they can be true of us on a daily basis. Even if we're in jobs that we enjoy, those things can still be true. And again, this is where finally we do not want to anchor our self-worth. We don't want to anchor our joy in our jobs. We don't want to anchor those things in the mechanics of our work and in the day-to-day sort of happiness factor. We want to finally anchor them in, if God has called me to an assignment, to a job, I want to do it for God's glory with my all, faithfully, as serving him, and trust that wherever he has me, that is where he wants me to be faithful and fruitful for him. And so that is the fuel that we need, especially when we're tempted to kind of feel more frustrated or more discouraged in the work that we're doing.
I mean, frustration at work, though, that's one of the we hear about that all the time, right? Perhaps half to three quarters of the people that are coming in every day are frustrated or would rather be doing something else. I mean, that those are pretty high numbers.
Yeah, and this is where I think the Christian has something that the non-Christian does not, right? If you are living for this world, if you are a non-Christian who does not have a relationship with the Lord, has not been redeemed by Christ, has not been given a new heart and a new life, well, then you are living for this world. And think about that. That means that you are living for a fallen world. You're living for a world that is literally been cursed by God, and so it is designed to actually frustrate you. Why? Because it's part of the curse. But in God's grace, part of the curse is actually pointing you to the fact that this is not all there is. So part of the reason you feel frustrated is because God's cursed your work, and God wants you to see that it's frustrating living apart from Him. And if you're a Christian, though, you can suddenly live in a fallen world, live in a world that's frustrating, and just remind yourself, oh yeah, of course, this is why God in Christ came to redeem us. He came to redeem us from this cursed world so that we can have a personal relationship with Him. Yes, my job is frustrating, but I know that this is not all there is. I'm not living for this frustrating world. I have another home that I'm living for. And so suddenly the Christian comes at this frustrating world and this frustrating job with an entirely different perspective than the non-Christian. And that makes an enormous difference in the way that we go about our work.
Which is different than just work is just a means to an end. So I earn money so I can give to ministries or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, the purposes God has for us in our work are varied. You know, there's not just one reason God tells us we work in the Bible. There's actually a number of reasons, right? We work to bring God glory. We work to serve other people. Ways that we serve other people are we earn money. That's a very valid biblical reason for our work, so that we can earn money, so that we're not a burden for others. We work so that we can, you know, serve other humans and other you know, other people in the work that we do. There's good reasons that God gives us to work that are all biblical, and they're not simply so that we can give money to church or so that we can do evangelism. There's other good purposes God has for us in our work.
Sebastian Traeger is author of a great little book called The Gospel at Work, How Working for King Jesus Gives Purpose and Meaning to Our Jobs. And earlier this hour, we heard from Dr. Paul White, his brand new book, The Vibrant Workplace, Overcoming the Obstacles to Building a Culture of Appreciation. We'll have both those interviews posted on our website at myfaithradio.com. And by the way, you can check out Paul White's website as well, appreciationatwork.com. And just keep in mind Colossians 3:17. And whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him.
For Alan Nagel, cultivating his relationship with the Holy Spirit has made all the difference in his life. Hi, I'm Steve Douglas for Making Your Life Count. Listen as Alan describes his growing relationship with the Lord.
He wants to become a vital part of my life in everything I do, every conversation, every activity, to just know the Spirit of God is working all around me, but He's also working in me. And so it's just as important to recognize He wants to be a part of my life in every activity I'm doing, so that it's a team, the Holy Spirit in my life. And that's the secret to the Christian life, in walking in the Spirit, living in the Spirit.
The Holy Spirit delights in changing your life from the inside out. To learn more about His role within and through you, go to makingyourlifecount.com.
They want to stick around here on Faith Radio for great programming, of course, all week long, Holy Week. But tomorrow on Connecting Faith, we're going to talk with Lee Strobel. Excited about welcoming Lee back. The Case for Christ, of course, has been an international bestseller for years, and his story coming out in movie just released this past weekend.
Yeah, it's open in a local theater near you, probably. Yeah. Check the listings.
So we'll talk about the new movie and a little bit about Lee's life and his passion for sharing the truths of the gospel. And then Thursday, Colin Smith, the pastor and teacher on Unlocking the Bible, will join us. We'll talk heaven, how I got here. So some great programming. And then Friday, a couple of special programs with Max Licato and Carter Conlon. So a great week here on Connecting Faith for Holy Week. Glad to have you listening in on Faith Radio every day. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. And you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.